Dr. Chan, Nicole Winfield from the Associated Press. You referred in your speech to Ebola and about how bad policies in one country or a killer disease can rapidly reverberate around the globe. We know that within the WHO there is some soul searching going on about how its own policies may have contributed to the problems in the early stages of the outbreak. I'd like to ask you what the WHO Geneva could and should have done to better respond, given the criticism about the performance of the Africa office.
Well, as I said again and again, and especially to colleagues from AP, you are not the first one who talked to me. There will be time for history, and we will review how the whole world, and especially WHO, managed the Ebola outbreak. At this point in time, it is important for us to focus our entire energy and attention to help countries who are being affected to get the job done. And there will be time for sharing those information in a transparent and accountable manner. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me get the questions down there. We have the microphone there to the lady, I believe, from Latin America.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Graziano. Le da letra de la Radio de las Naciones Unidas en Nueva York. Con respecto a la situación del sistema alimentario en los países de América Latina, ¿qué es que lo más preocupa a la FAO en este momento? Gracias.
Sin duda, el crecimiento de la obesidad, sobre todo en niños. Usted sabe que América Latina hoy día, con 12, 13 excepciones, son países de ingreso mediano, debido al desarrollo que han logrado la última década, casi todos los países han logrado alcanzar un nivel de ingreso mediano y reducido mucho la pobreza, sobre todo la pobreza extrema, y también el hambre. Si usted mira el mapa del hambre hoy de América Latina, es blanco. Seis años pasados era rojo, que estaba en los niveles máximos de hambre. Pero hemos visto creciente el número de obesidad, sobre todo en países de Mesoamérica, por ejemplo, México, América Central, pero también el Caribe. Niveles de obesidad alarmantes de niños. Y eso es sobre todo fruto de una ingestión demasiada de azúcar y de grasas y proveniente de lo que se llama la comida rápida, ¿no? El hecho de que se cambió los hábitos alimentarios para comer en la calle, fora de su hogar, y eso ha incrementado el consumo de esos productos rápidos, sobre todo muy apreciado de los latinos las frituras. Así que promover dietas saludables, valorar los productos locales, volver a tener una dieta basada en productos frescos, como frutas, vegetales, son algunas de las iniciativas que estamos apoyando en la región. Hay, por ejemplo, un programa muy bien apreciado en Argentina, que es el 5 al día, que propone que se deba comer 5 diferentes tipos de frutas de colores distintos por día, y así sucesivamente. O sea, estamos trabajando en recuperar productos locales, dietas locales, productos abandonados. Por ejemplo, la quinoa, que hemos promovido el año pasado como parte del Año Internacional de la Quinoa.
Muchas gracias, director general. I understand we have a journalist from Thailand online. I'm going to give the floor to the Straits Times, Nirmal Ghosh. Can you hear me? Nirmal?
I have I'm from the Straits Times, calling from Bangkok, Thailand. I actually have two quick questions. One, may I address to Dr. Chan. We've been hearing about obesity and we've been aware of it for some time. I think back in 2012, in fact, you came out very strongly on the issue of obesity. Could you comment on the fact that there's so far been little apparent success in curbing it because the obesity rates keep rising? And the second question is, perhaps to both of you, if I may, is government intervention and regulation of the food industry now more necessary? And if that is so, given the size and vested interests of the food industry, could state regulation work in this regard?
Thank you, Nirmal. I'm going to give the floor to Dr. Chan for the first question.
Thank you very much, Straits Times. Colleague calling in from Thailand. And the first question you asked about is, you know, what can we do to curb childhood obesity? This is truly a very worrying situation. And the trend goes up and up and up. Now, what can be done? It requires multi-stakeholder actions. And WHO, we stand very firmly behind, you know, the best form of food starting from birth is breastfeeding, breast milk. Feed the children for as long as you can. And then when you switch over to mixed diet, it is important that we respect culturally appropriate and, you know, local diet. And these are things that can be done by parents at home. And of course, the community support is important. What do I mean by that? Availability of fresh fruit, more vegetables, and the availability of make it less available, food that are very dense in energy, in food, in fat, and in sugar and salt. Now, what does that mean? Oftentimes, it's easy to blame a certain sector. The fact of the matter is, parents nowadays are very busy. And how can the community or government have the right mechanisms to support parents, especially working parents, to keep traditional, healthy, affordable diet, make it easy to make and prepare at home? Now, processed food is something we need to live with, because when you see that they are selling so well, that means there is a consumer demand for it, isn't it? So we can work with the industry, discuss with the industry, and find what I call public health solutions. And it is quite clear that in some places where healthy food with less, especially trans fat, less sugar and less fat can be prepared and make them palatable. So it requires a dialogue with the industry through governments. Now, let me also take this opportunity to answer your second point. You're about government regulation. Now, regulation is important, but over-regulate is also a problem. So is under-regulation. So what is the right level of regulation? Again, it requires government-led and civil society, and more importantly, the general public. They must have dialogue and find the appropriate solutions for the country, because there is no one, what I call, approach for all. You need context-specific and country-specific. Now, in this part of the world, I mean, the wonderful diet is called the Mediterranean diet. And it is extremely good here, but it may be different, and the acceptance is different in different parts of the world. So in a nutshell, we require governments to take the leadership. We require academics to provide the evidence and the science. We need civil society to make the right movement. And then, of course, we do need to work with the industry to find the solution. Thank you very much for those two questions.
Thank you, Director General.
Just to add some comments on the regulation. Yes, we do believe that the governments need to be responsible to regulate the conditions to assure the consumer rights. I think that the consumer have the right to be properly informed about what they are eating. What happens now is we don't know what's inside the bottle or in the can that we buy. That is the fact. So those nutrition facts that you have stamped there need to be regulated and need to be alerted, because nobody knows what are the danger levels of something that you saw there and even don't know what it is. Also, I would say that labeling is an important area for action that need to be regulated, because nowadays with globalization, we are eating products produced in different parts of the world with different labeling that we cannot most of the time even understand what they are about. And I will also raise an important issue that we need better information about nutrition. I believe that in fact we need to be educated how to eat again. My old times, I remember that my grandmother told me, if you don't eat vegetables, you have problem, or fruits, or even take the milk in the morning. But now, who does that? Who does that? So we need this consumer education again to know exactly what are the healthy food and what we need to eat. Not only we, but our children need it. Not only rely on the propaganda that they see on the TV. These also need to be regulated.
Thank you. Let me open the floor again here in Rome. Any questions? The gentleman, lady at the back.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Paddy Agnew, Irish Times. A question for both director generals. I'm told the conference is costing $3.8 million. At this point in time, is that a good use of your energies, resources, and funds? And by spending $3.8 million on this, do you hope to persuade donor countries to obviously donate more than $3.8 million?
Well, yes, we have spent $3.8 million for this conference. This includes all the work done, including the documents that have been prepared since, as Margaret said, more than 1 year ago. And I would like to have the opportunity now to thank the European Union, Germany, Italy, Norway, Russia Federation, Spain, and Switzerland for their contribution. They were all voluntary contribution. And by the way, we just launched a trust fund to implement the framework for action on nutrition for voluntary contributions for those that want to do it. Two comments on that. We lose nowadays more or less $3.5 trillion yearly with malnutrition, consequence of malnutrition. This means 4 to 5% of the GDP, world GDP, let's say, the global GDP. 3.8 million means 1 billion part. This is less than a homeopathic dilution. So I don't think that our cost is so high on that. But what we hope is that we can get commitment from governments to help us push this, because we don't have enough budget to face all the new challenge we are facing in the world. So obesity is a public issue. We hope that with this conference, all the attention that we are getting from the media, from you, will help us to raise the commitment on nutrition from the governments. Thank you.
I think you raise a very logical question. Is this the best way to spend? I'm getting echo. Is this the best way to spend $3.8 million? I would argue yes. It is, you know, important for us to realize in the 1990s, when the first conference was held 22 years ago, the world had more than 1 billion people suffering from hunger. 22 years later, we still have more than 800 million. Yes, we make some progress, but not good enough. And the cost, you know, for those people who suffer hunger, they may have undernutrition, stunting, or malnutrition, anemia because of micronutrient deficiency. They may have goiter. So, you know, the return on investment for 3.8 million is well worth it. That means we need to continue to bring to attention a very important area, and yet not much progress or not as quick progress as we would like to see. Nutrition, honestly, I mean, you know, I need to declare conflict of interest. I study nutrition as my first degree, social scientist, and I understand the importance. Without proper nutrition, your investment, not just in health, in education is also wasted, because the cognitive function of the children cannot benefit from the educational investment of the country. So you are losing in the educational investment, and then indeed, because they are hungry, they are malnourished, they don't have the micronutrients to keep them healthy, you are also paying through their healthcare bills. So I think 3.8 million to bring leaders of the world to come together, to re-energize their political commitment, and to take action. But this time around, we add one very important element to that. One of the 8 elements under the framework of action is accountability. So countries, if they commit, they must be held accountable. It's not not too difficult to overpromise, but whether or not you can deliver. And the important point is, we hope that this time around, more actions, better results would be shown. Thank you for that question.
Thank you. For the last question of today, we are going to go to Africa. We have our colleague Kumia in Burkina Faso, I understand, online. Kumia, c'est le rédacteur en chef du quotidien Citoyen. Kumia, vous avez la parole.
Ok, oui, parfait. Ok, ok. Merci encore donc de cet honneur que vous m'avez fait pour pouvoir participer donc à cette conférence de presse via Skype. Donc, ma préoccupation est la suivante, c'est de savoir comment dans nos pays, pour donc les objectifs soient intégrés, les objectifs nutritionnels dans des pays comme le nôtre, où l'on peine à atteindre la sécurité alimentaire. Autrement dit, lorsqu'on n'a même pas suffisamment à manger, est-ce qu'on peut parler de choix alimentaire par contre?
Merci beaucoup. I don't think we have here very well, but I can translate it because I have taken some notes into English. In a country like ours, where we are still struggling to achieve food security, how can nutritional goals be incorporated? That is, when we don't have enough to eat, can we really talk about balanced diet and food choices?
Of course we can. As Margaret already said, we are talking about two sides of the same coin. The coin does not have value if they have only one side. That means you cannot only eat, let's say, for example, rice in your country. Burkina is a good example of that. This will not be a nutritious diet. you have malnutrition, you have deficiency of vitamin A, because the rice alone do not provide vitamin A, so you have deficiency in the eyes, in your children. So you need to add bananas, for example. Rice and banana is a very good diet in my country, Brazil.
Rice and black bean too.
Rice and black bean too. And I could give you a lot of other examples that the idea is to promote these local foods. We most of the times we believe that food is about commodities. Rice, soybeans, corn, wheat, potatoes. No, there is a lot of foods. There are 7,000 species of food around the world that we can use to promote a better balanced diet. So this is what we are talking about. Diversify our diets, look for more local foods, fresh food especially, based on fruits and vegetables that you have a lot in your country. And promote the use of fish. That's another growing tendency that we see that will play a good role in providing vitamins and proteins also.
I just want to reinforce a message by Dr. De Silva. Yes, certainly, you know, both food security and nutrition can be addressed together. And I'm learning, the importance of local wisdom. Rice is a very important staple, but rice is lacking in certain elements we call lysine. And if you eat rice together with lentils, they complement each other, and it will give you the perfect protein. So that's why I'm saying, you know, in my earlier comments, yes, when you have nothing, totally no food, that is, of course, a very difficult situation. But when you do have access to food, there are different ways that you can have a nutritious diet, and local traditional diet is extremely important. And as I said, for young children, breast milk, and breast milk. And these are economical, affordable, and they are important for the growth of young infants. Thank you again.
Thank you to both Director Generals. We are going to close here the press conference. We all have a very tight agenda today. I'll thank you, everybody, for your participation.